for new podcasters, really identifying what it is that is driving you to do it. If there's something out there that you want to hear that you're not hearing, I think that's a great starting point.
On this edition of Radio Survivor, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, the hashtag that became an instant hit podcast.
The popular media discourse around Muslim, the experience of being Muslim, does feel so either academic or political in nature that we forget the experience of the individuals living it.
A new national live indie music show is here, and it's on college radio stations.
And four men mansplained feminism on the radio.
But it's okay, because it was 1972.
I guess we're all in a way, somewhat nervous about doing this.
My name is Eric Klein, and I am a host and producer of this program, Radio Survivor.
And my name is Paul Riesmandel. I'm the other host and producer. Thank you all for taking some time with us today.
Yeah, and we're going to jump right into our feature interview with Zara Nurbash, who is the host of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. And I had a great time talking with her. Thanks for setting that up, Paul. And, well, all you need to know is that it's a relatively new podcast that we are big fans of now. And Zara Nurbash co-hosts that with Taz Ahmed.
Like, it was just like an okay date, but like, he asked me why I don't drink, and I absolutely hate that question. So I avoided answering it, saying like, oh, I just don't. He's like, oh, is it religious? I was like, it kind of started out, but now it goes beyond just religion. Like, I have a lot of thoughts about why I don't drink. And then he asked me the dreaded question, how Muslim are you? Are you just Muslim culturally or what? Just like, what does that even mean? Like, I didn't know how to answer that. Mainly because I think it's kind of a stupid question to answer, and I don't like answering stupid questions.
He asks you, how Muslim are you?
Basically, yeah.
Ew.
Zara Nurbash of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, thank you for joining us on Radio Survivor.
Thank you for having me.
So, your podcast has a hashtag in it.
Yep.
Why?
Because we're hella hip. and also just because we started as a hashtag. We were a joke. Hashtag Taz, my co-host Taz Ahmed, and I would call each other hashtag good Muslim, hashtag bad Muslim, and sometimes hashtag good bad Muslim, and claim the name. And after a while, our followers started asking us, like, hey, where's this podcast? I was looking for it. And we were like, maybe we should do one.
Ah, so that's your Twitter audience pushed you to record podcasts together.
Yeah, and it's where a lot of our conversations between podcasts take place and inspire topics.
That's really lucky. I really like that. So you and Taz both built up a Twitter audience well in advance of taking to the radio.
Yeah, actually almost 2 years in advance.
Okay, so maybe I wanted to talk about Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, but first I just want to talk about social media strategy, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What do you think? How did you build up an audience that exists that you can actually engage with?
Well, I know for me, I began by sort of following people that I admired that would talk back to me. And when big events hit that had to do with Muslims, which is frequent, then, I would hop on, and Twitter has always been a great place for me because I'm a comedian and there's a character limit. And so you have to be fast and you have to be punchy. And so it was a great place for me to try material, work on what it is that I really want to say. And so with every new round, Benghazi happened, the Boston Marathon happened, 9/11 anniversaries would come up, hate crimes would occur. And every time there was always this anti-Islamic rhetoric that would sneak in unchecked that I would have fun poking fun at. And, you get retweeted and seen by various people, and it sort of spreads from there. So I think, Twitter, with its limitations, really forced me to hone in on my voice and what it was specifically that I wanted and needed to say.
That's really exciting to me. I'm jealous. So you go from the Twitter world to a podcasting world. What changed?
A lot. I think somebody recently, I just did a sort of Skype in conversation with SF State for a class at SF State, and they had actually gotten our podcast on their syllabus, which has been a fun experience. Huh. You know, because it is so topical, the conversation on what is a good Muslim, what is a bad Muslim, what is a very, very, very bad Muslim. And one girl was asking about, she was asking us about self-policing. And I noticed for myself that before we sort of expanded our audience with the podcast, in a very short amount of time, I definitely felt, you know, bolder, like, and there was like less at stake. You know, I could say whatever it was that I wanted. And now, you know, we've been on BBC, NPR, CBC, you know, Wired Magazine, BuzzFeed. We're all over the place. And now all of a sudden I feel a little bit more like the stakes are a bit higher. And I catch myself sort of self-policing a little bit more than I used to. And so that's a new thing that we're kind of managing.
Ah, that's interesting. So you guys hit the ground running then with all that publicity, because it's a relatively new program.
Oh, man, you will not believe this, but before we recorded our first podcast, literally like just before, we had our Global Nation interview about our podcast.
What's Global Nation?
It is a show on NPR distributed by PRI. And on Martin Luther King Day, we did an episode we recorded with them.
Wow.
And they asked us, you know, so like, what kind of segments do you have and how does your podcast go? And we were like, well, when we record it, we'll let you know. So in our second episode, we were featured in Mother Jones. By our fifth episode, we'd been on BBC's Best of the Weekend Roundup. And so it really has been a whirlwind. We really did hit the ground running.
That's really amazing. And so, and I think we can put the credit at the, ooh, I don't want to use the words that other people use, but you guys built your brand on Twitter first, which is how you can jump into podcasting with such a with both an audience and then this amazing group of media people that also want to know the story.
Yeah, I think that a big part of it is that both Taz and I were already public figures ourselves, and we're already touring, speaking. You know, she was on many panels. I was already doing stand-up. I had a one-woman show called All Atheists Are Muslim that I was having fun touring. And so we both already were doing this work. And when we would get together, we always were like, God, I wish that the conversations that we have were the kinds of conversations I would hear more of. We should, you know, have those conversations because people want it. There's really a need for it. And we, in our research to find a model, really couldn't find one for what it was that we wanted to do. And so I think that for new podcasters, really identifying what it is that is driving you to do it, you know, like if there's something out there that you want to hear that you're not hearing, I think that's a great starting point in terms of understanding what your brand is and what you want to do.
That's great. So it's funny because you said your research to find a model, and what I'm hearing on your show reminds me of lots of other podcasts that are working really well, because it's two friends who want to be talking to each other and are benefiting from the from setting up microphones so that their conversation that they'd probably be having anyway can be shared publicly. And of course, you're and that's actually, there's lots of podcasts that are doing that and doing it really well. But what was missing for you was who those two friends are.
Yeah, I love that you point that out, because that is exactly the model. And I think what was sort of blindsiding us when we were seeking out that model is that these conversations are also political. Yeah. And at the same time, when we have these conversations, it's not politics focused. It's not heavy-handed. It's really about our personal experiences of them. And so I think there's this way that the popular media discourse around Muslim, the experience of being Muslim, does feel so either academic or political in nature that we forget the experience of the individuals, living it.
Right.
So much so that even we were like, is this out there? Is somebody doing this?
Right. Especially with not light, like you're not taking things seriously, but light, like it's not always academic and it's not always newsy. It's like, it's people. So I think we should define for the listeners, in case they haven't heard your show before, what I think I understand about the title of the podcast, hashtag Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. Although you don't say the hashtag when you say the title of the podcast.
Yeah.
I'll throw a definition out there and you can swat it away or accept it. It's that, like, in the mainstream, although what a terrible way to talk about the world, but on TV, there's the good Muslims and the bad Muslims, and the good ones are less religious or even entirely secular, and the bad ones are super religious and violent. And then, but you guys were experiencing in your own lives sort of a weird opposite of that, where being a good Muslim meant that you were being observant of the religious practices that your family had, and being a bad Muslim meant that you were being that you were drinking or eating pizza.
Yeah, I think they're getting even more specific. The ways that I found myself on the spectrum of either being a good Muslim or a bad Muslim is that I openly identify as the pork-eating, alcohol-drinking, premarital sex-having kind of Muslim, which is not my co-host. My co-host doesn't eat pork. She doesn't drink.
No. One of my smiles when I listen to your show is just knowing that she is, like, kind of squirming inside whenever you are open about those things.
Yeah, and I love that we disagree. And the more that we do the podcast, we started doing it just as two friends who were like, we see eye to eye on a lot of things. And the more we do the podcast, the more we're like, wow, we are so different. And that's been a really fun and, I think, important discovery.
Yeah. Yeah. A relationship a relationship that already existed, but still deepens and grows on a podcast. It's such a fun, that's my advice for people now, is if you have this desire to podcast, you really want to find somebody that you want to be closer friends with and then record all your conversations. But then, have conversations that are a little bit more significant than just the TV you watched. Although you guys do that all the time. And because of your point of view, it's a lot more interesting than if I was talking about the TV I watched.
Yeah, I think that it can't be said enough how much the anti-Islamic rhetoric, especially with the 2016 Republican campaign, affects the individual livelihood of so many Muslims. And so for us to be able to have a space, a place to come to every month, every other week, and sort of hash that out and digest it and understand it as two women who do this for a living, individually as memoirists, for me as a comedian, for Taz as a activist and speaker, voting rights activist. it really, I think, affords other people the opportunity to be heard in a similar sense.
Yeah, and so you guys only you don't have a regular schedule for your podcast. You're not doing it every week. You're not doing it every other week necessarily.
Right now we're once a month. We try to post mid-month, and you know, our producer, Quincy Surasmith, offered to, he volunteered to help us with the tech because we are not in the same location. I'm frequently either on tour or in San Francisco, based in San Francisco, and Taz is in LA. And so part of it is just, you know, and you're so familiar with this, how much easier it's become to podcast remotely.
Yeah. Just bring your iPhone or your MacBook.
Yeah. And so he's really made it so that we can kind of, make sure our sound is cool and piece our segments together and sort of shepherded us through that. And the more we do it, the more we're sort of veering toward a biweekly schedule.
Yeah, because from what I've been told, that's you could tell me. It seems that a more regular schedule that's predictable and more often than once a month helps keep the audience engaged.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think we are an odd exception simply because of the kinds of conversations we're having and also that Muslims are just always in the news.
I wonder if it helps that you're still minute to minute connected with an audience via Twitter. I wonder if that helps so that, you know, you know that when you tweet out the link to the next episode, people will be excited about it.
Yeah, and a lot of the comments that we get that we incorporate.
How do you go about that?
We get a lot of we did get a lot of responses to our episode on shame. We had an episode called Shame on You that we put out after 6 months into our podcasting about. We were receiving a lot of comments on Reddit that were like, these are not Muslim women, you know, they don't represent me, and shame on them, how dare they flaunt mm-hmm. their sins. Conflating a lot of, you know, what is my vice and not Taz's.
She's guilty by association.
By association, exactly. And so we got a lot of fan mail that was coming in at the same time that was like, thank you so much for having these conversations. I really needed to hear this. I'm struggling telling my parents that I'm gay, or I'm struggling that I'm telling my parents that I am with a man who's not Muslim or who is Muslim but not of our same culture. And so it was interesting that at the same time that we had this fan mail pouring in on Reddit, we would see, like, you know, these other comments that were like, shame on them, shame on them. And it was just so clear how marginalizing shame is, how damaging and destructive it is. And, so we incorporated that as one of our topics.
Mm-hmm. And so you read those comments?
Yeah. Most of the time we paraphrase because we are a half hour show and we have a lot to discuss. Once a month means a whole lot of Muslim.
Yeah.
To sum up, it's been quite active, Muslims in the media.
Right. And so you guys have, how many do you have? You have about 12 episodes up, right?
We're on our 10th episode. Right. We'll be recording our 11th episode soon. We started in January, so once a month we've been putting out each episode.
So do you guys see yourselves moving forward at the same sort of rhythm and doing the same stuff, or do you have new stuff in mind?
Yeah, we're going to be out there more often. We're aiming for a biweekly format, at some point weekly. It'll change our segments in some sense. We'll have more time to sort of dive into conversation. So I'm really excited for where we're headed.
And how do you make that adjustment to do twice as much podcasting?
Good question. I think it'll have to change some of our format. it allows us to go deeper into conversations. Right now, I guess to share with your listeners, we have segments that are, you know, the big headlines, what's in the news, and then we have Creeping Sharia as a segment. We have fatwas. We have Good Muslim Awards that we give out. We have awkward Ask a Muslim moments. And each of those little segments are about like 3 minutes long. I think going biweekly affords us the time to incorporate more interviews, to have guests on as interviews. We've had a lot of people offer up their time to join us on the podcast. Uh-huh. But because of the limitations of our software, we weren't able to in the beginning. And now we kind of have the prowess and ability to do that. So that's been really exciting.
That's great. I would look forward to hearing that change on your air. Well, Zara Norbash, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Survivor today. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having us. Keep on surviving.
Yeah.
Thanks, Zara. We will keep surviving. And I want to thank you, Eric, for doing that interview.
Such a pleasure.
I met Zara at an event called the Collab Space. It's put on by a group called Media Shift. So big props, big shout out to Media Shift and to Mark Glazer, who put it on. So Media Shift looks at digital media, mm-hmm. and they're a nonprofit, and they were affiliated with PBS. So they have a website called Media Shift, mediashift.org. And in the last few years, they've taken to putting on different sort of workshop events. And this one was about radio and podcasting. And that's where I had a chance to meet Zara. And she was immediately friendly and outgoing and funny and very inquisitive and very, very thoughtful, as we heard in the interview about podcasting, about radio, because she was new to it. And yeah. I think she was there to learn, as were so many people there. And we talked and I said, you know, I would like to have you on our podcast. And I dropped the ball. And the other day, on Tuesday, October 20th, I participated in a Twitter chat put on by Media Shift. And they have a hashtag called EdShift, for Education Shift. So this was a Twitter chat about podcasting and education, but being successful in podcasting. And Zara had been invited and she sent me an email. She goes, hey, I saw that we were both invited to this thing. You're going to have me on the podcast. And I'm like, yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, so that was what brought her back onto my radar. I'm sorry, Zara, for having waited like a month.
You waited until our podcast got really good.
Until our podcast got really good to invite Zara to be on. So I'm glad you could do that. But there are several things that she mentioned in the interview that I think are really worth highlighting with regard to starting their podcast, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. Because it really stood out to me that they did some things right.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they were new podcasters, they seem to be approaching podcasting like you should approach kind of any new venture, right? That there's, in some ways, there's nothing particularly special about podcasting. She said they did research.
Yeah.
And we're looking at other podcasts. And also looking specifically to see, you know, what was being done or not being done, you know, and seeing that, oh, what we want to talk about is not being done. Therefore, there should be a podcast about it. And the fact that they were writers, Zara's a comedian, and she'd been using Twitter, but she'd been using Twitter deliberately, the way she mentioned to you, that she had used it to help kind of hone her comedic voice, to be funny and concise and interesting and entertaining in the space of 140 characters, which I think is what allows her to be successful on the podcast. Because, I mean, you know, and probably like the training as a comedian, having to go up in front of audiences and be funny and keep their attention are skills that she's bringing to the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think about all that practice before she'd started the first episode. Kind of allowed them to kind of start out of the gate running.
Yeah, they hit the ground running.
They hit the ground running.
And it's, I mean, right now, as we go to air, there's only 10 episodes of their show, and it's good. It's a great show.
And it's gotten a lot of press, and in part because they They had a good hashtag. They had a good hook. You know, and that and it's you know, there's no accounting for timing. Right. Good timing is something often you have no control over.
Yeah.
Zeitgeist is something you don't have control over. But they hit it. They found it. And they seem to be quite willing to take advantage of it, getting these interviews. In fact, having their first interview before the first show was even recorded and released. And I think that, there's a lot to learn from that. Even if Zara is not holding herself up as a podcasting expert, I think there's a bunch of things that they got right, and that anyone who's thinking about doing a podcast or a radio show, because I think this is equally applicable to somebody who's starting a new show on a college station or a community station or low power FM station, can think about, you know, about really, you know, looking around. Like, and I think what happens often is we have an idea for something and we can kind of fall in love with the idea. And so we want to do it. And we haven't really thought about, well, how original is the idea? And it's not, I think, necessarily, is my idea so original? But is there someone else doing what I want to do? And how would what I want to do be similar or different? How can I, you know, how can I individualize it? How can I make it more me? Or how can I make it more sort of special? So it's not a matter of, you know, if you're on a community radio station and you want to do a punk rock show, it's not a matter that you shouldn't do the punk rock show.
Do what you want to do.
It's how would you make this an interesting and different and special punk rock show that if then maybe you were had the opportunity to syndicate it, other stations would want to play it. Not that you ever will necessarily do that, but how, what do you bring to it that's different? What are you bringing? What are you adding to the conversation? Why is it that it should be you, or you and your partners or your organizations? Why should you be doing this podcast or this show? And with the emphasis on you, what is it that you're bringing that's special? And I think these are questions that sometimes we don't always ask ourselves. We think it's a good idea. We get very focused on the idea, mm-hmm. And we forget that there are people behind the microphones. Or if you're playing music, that there's a person picking these songs. And that personality is important, whether you're working under a pseudonym, right? Whether you sort of aren't working under your own name, whether you kind of lead dual lives, you have a day job and you want to be, and you have a different DJ identity. That identity, I think, is important and helps listeners to identify with your show and helps new potential listeners to find it and perhaps find it interesting. So I'm really glad you had that interview, because I think she shared so many interesting points about that and about the process. But and she sounds very thoughtful about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something that she's tossing off. It sounds like it's deliberate, and that she's got a great co-host, and it sounds like they have a good producer. And they're focused on it. And, you know, there's no guarantees, of course, that all that work will necessarily mean you're going to gather up a big audience,
right,
and be, you know, atop of the iTunes charts. But I think that that helps you to move in that direction.
I have other advice for podcasters or aspirational podcasters. And it's something that's been on my mind a lot lately. And yes, you want to succeed and have a huge audience, although I'm sure there's another side to that coin. But we'll assume that you really do want to succeed and have a huge audience. I still would encourage everybody who is choosing to podcast these days that you also want to make sure that when your project doesn't have that audience, is it still of value to you? So have conversations with people that you want to have conversations with, and be your best audience. So for Radio Survivor, for instance, like I get things. Every time I re-listen to an episode, I'm relearning something that that I can build on. Like I am building an expertise in, which is surprising. I'm not sure I knew that this was what was about to happen 21 episodes ago, 21 weeks ago, that I was going to get better at understanding podcasts. That was not my intention. So yeah, do something that you're fascinated by, because in the end, if you have less than 1,000 listeners, if you have less than 100 listeners, you still might really benefit from the work. And so Zara and Taz, they don't have that problem. But if they did, I imagine they would still be thankful for the chance to BS with each other and get things off their chest, which is what was happening prior to them recording themselves, was they had a lot to talk about. And so, yeah, that's the other thing I like.
I think that's an important point. I think about blogging in that way, too.
Right.
John Anderson, who's been a guest on our program, who runs DIYmedia.net and who is a professor of journalism at Brooklyn College, he's been running DIYmedia.net for well over a decade. And he's told me on occasion that he often just looks at it sort of like his public notebook. Yeah. That he's tracking – these are things he wants to make sure he's tracking and that he's recording his own thoughts on. And doing it in the blog format means other people benefit from it and other people can share in it because he thinks the things that he's interested in are important. And so it has – so even if he doesn't have a huge readership, nevertheless, there's a value to himself on doing it. And then, you know, I mean, I know John because he's a blogger. That's how we met. So right. I think other people are really very much benefiting from it. And if we take this into podcasting and let's say maybe you are on your show, you do interviews. It's this great opportunity to meet other interesting people and talk with them and maybe gives you that one extra leg up or gives other people that extra incentive to talk with you because it will be shared, because it will be recorded, because it is a podcast. Jeff Ulrich, who is the founder of Earwolf and Midroll Media, Midroll Media where I work, I helped him produce the Wolf Den podcast when I first came on board there. And that's what he told me about the show, is that he started it to some extent because it gave him this great opportunity and excuse to talk to other people in comedy and in podcasting who he wanted to learn from, who he wanted to have a conversation from. And it gave them this extra incentive to have that conversation with him because it would be a podcast for Earwolf.
Right, which has always been the privilege of journalism. And now, because we live in such wonderful times, it's more... everyone gets those tools.
That's right. The podcast or the blog is your bona fide, right? It says that this isn't going to go into a shoebox, metaphorically speaking, because I think that is kind of the way the case used to be. You think of people who did who did great oral histories or who did interviews for books that never happened, that either never got picked up or they were never able to finish, and all that great research is in a shoebox on a shelf that never gets shared. And that's why I love podcasts like the Internet History Podcast, because those are interviews for a book on early internet history. But I'm getting to share in the primary research before the book even comes out. And of course, I will buy the book. I'm so excited for it because I love the interviews and I love that period of time from the late 80s through the 90s when I was a huge, huge kind of like computer internet nerd, and there were very few people on the internet by comparison. I'm, you know, a huge nerd for that, and I love hearing that. And it's so great that the author is sharing that research. Another podcast I like that's sort of similar is called You're Not So Smart. David McRaney is a podcaster. He's a journalist, and he started researching this, you know, sort of basically cognitive biases, ways in which we often make the same errors over and over and over again because mm-hmm. we're not as smart as we think we are. And he really kind of started out by then also talking to the people who were in his research, who were the experts in his research, and sharing that as a podcast. And so then it gets shared in multiple different ways. Of course, and I read his book and, you know, I benefit doubly as a listener, but I suspect, you know, as an author, David McRaney then benefits doubly because the podcast helps to develop an audience for his book and vice versa.
I like, it's also like a promise to the future you. Like if you put the podcast out in public with, you say, I'm intending to turn this into a book, you can't forget that was your plan 3 years later.
Like, that's right. You might get called on it. Yeah. Your listeners will be like, hey, where's that book? We're waiting for it. Yeah. I want to pre-order it, and it hasn't happened. So I think that these are things that are being framed in my mind as we've been doing this, mm-hmm. as podcasting and the practice of has been a central topic, and as we try to also merge it with the practice of radio, in particular community radio and community-focused radio. And yeah, I see that we're like writing a book as we do this in a lot of ways. you could start to pick out these nuggets of wisdom from right. our various guests and from the various discussions,
yeah.
and put together some best practices or hints and tips, because I don't think any one of these practices or tips by itself is necessarily essential. Zara mentioned they're not doing the show weekly, right? They're doing the show monthly. I don't even know that they have a regular release day or date.
They said they hope it's in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. And that doesn't necessarily seem to be holding them back. It seems as though all the other things they're getting right are so right that it doesn't seem to be holding them back. Maybe when they go to that more regular schedule, they'll build more of an audience, or, you know, that'll bring more people on, but we don't know.
Right. We know that when they're not podcasting, they're on Twitter, hashtagging it up, participating in some big conversations publicly, not just talking about lunch. And then the other thing that they do is they write personal essays, strong personal essays where, about their being young Muslim women in America, that I think keep them in the world, keep them fresh in front of their readers' eyes.
Yeah, I think that's right. So before we wrap this up, I just wanted to let everyone know that they can check out that Twitter chat that I mentioned that happened on October 20th about podcasting, because there was a lot of really great nuggets of wisdom from the many really smart and talented people who participated in the Twitter chat. So there is a story at radiosurvivor.com. The folks at Media Shift storified it.
Okay.
So they kind of picked out some of the top tweets and put it into a Storify thing, which I've embedded then in a story at radiosurvivor.com. So we'll have that in the show notes, radiosurvivor.com/podcast.
Great. Well, I'm not done yet.
Okay.
I have two more things about this interview that I want to talk to you about. And one is Twitter. And hooray for Twitter. Twitter does not make us angry the way Facebook does. Good for them. Although they can screw that up at any moment. The people who are trying to make increase the value for the shareholders, who I'm sure are not happy about how Twitter is proceeding compared to Facebook. Ugh. So, and I know there's these wonderful. So it's a platform conversation, and it's interesting to me because it keeps coming up. So, and yet Twitter functions better. I just have to say that, especially as a public place to talk out loud and to think out loud. Facebook seems to hide more behind different weird paywalls or curated streams, right? Because you don't get the fire hose, because you get some sort of algorithm picking what you see at any given time. You're not as able to know what's going on. But anyway, still, here we are, depending on a for-profit platform to communicate with our audience when we talk about Twitter. And based on my experience in internet land, that I have concerns. And so it's...
The gates could close or start to narrow
at any
moment.
Yeah, I think about Google Reader. I don't know if anyone out there knows Google Reader the way I did, but
I did.
It was a wonderful time, and Google built it. And we all were there, and then they turned it off.
Google Reader was an RSS reader that worked really well, which allowed you to take in the feeds of lots of other news sites and blogs,
yeah.
and very easily sort and then read all the various news of the day.
And share,
yes.
So it was Google's most effective social network, other than Gmail, which is really their most effective social network. Before the Google Plus, Google Reader really had a tiny community, but a very significant and happy tiny community of people sharing articles with each other.
And they never really, there were no ads on it that I remember. They never really monetized it, and then they just stopped developing it.
They just turned it off and turned on Google Plus.
And then I went to Feedly.
Oh, I forgot to mention YouTube.
Yeah,
Google has YouTube. I talk about social networks.
I love Feedly. That's what I use.
Yeah, right.
As my alternative.
But I guess the point is that platforms that we don't own are suspect. And so we're lucky to live today where hashtag good Muslim, bad Muslim can be built up as a brand and then turn into a podcast. But the indie journalist in me wishes that there was a non-for-profit corporation platform for this public conversation to take place. So I just wanted to get that out of my head and into this microphone. The other thing is I just said the word brand and it made me feel gross, but we also brought it up in the interview that Zara and Taz have very strong personal brands. And the word brand came up at the media conference that we attended last week that we talked about on the last podcast here in Portland. And I hate that. People aren't brands. People aren't brands.
We don't have a better word is what where I come to on this. Because I have to talk about it all the time because at least part of my job is B2B marketing, business-to-business marketing.
Right.
And we don't have a better word. And I think that maybe is the problem. I don't have a solution, right? Because by brand, we sort of mean a way to capture a number of qualities in a single word or single idea or name, right? And it comes out of advertising, it comes out of 20th century corporatism, right? Because
yeah. Boxes of cereal.
Right, exactly. And the thing is that otherwise we just have the words concept.
Personality.
Right, we have the words, right, personality or something. And they're harder to use because they're also commonly used in a number of other different ways, right? Whereas I think the word brand, it's fairly specific. It doesn't get used in a lot of different ways.
Just have to live with it.
Unfortunately, huh? It comes from, it comes from the idea of being branded. You know, as in cattle being branded with the hot brand on their flesh. So it's sort of etymology is not necessarily the greatest, but that's capitalism for you,
right? Well, I'm just gonna put that out into the world, and hopefully, I find a solution. I bet you someone's trying to figure it out. How do we build our personal brands without?
What's the new word?
Commodifying,
right?
Our humanity.
There you go. That's the question. I think that's the question. How do we create this idea of brand, which I think just exists in human brains, and not make it about the commodification of people and objects? I'm not sure what it is. I do want to say one more thing about the platform question, because I think that's always a question. You know, how do I do these things on the internet without giving away or losing control of what I do, right? And I think, it's always important in that. It doesn't mean don't use a Facebook or use a Twitter, but don't let that be the only repository of your work. If you have a blog, do your best to, at the very least, make sure it's on a platform where you can export all of your entries and that you do so on a regular basis and you have them in a text file somewhere should you ever want to move to a new platform or ever want to make a book or anything like that. If you're making a podcast, keep those files somewhere and keep lots of copies so you're not relying on your podcast host. We use SoundCloud. We have no particular problems with SoundCloud, but I've got it set up so that should SoundCloud all of a sudden quit supporting podcasts or just go out of business.
Or demand 10 times as much money.
Demand 10 times as much money, we can jump to a new platform. Same thing with our blogging. We have a host. We use WordPress, which is an open source software. So it's free to install and you can host that software anywhere on the internet. We use a particular host that we're pretty happy with, but at any moment we can take our ball and go home and move to someplace else. I think those are key elements, and that the more that you can own your own domain, you know, so it's not, you know, radiosurvivor.blogspot.com, which again, Blogspot and
radiosurvivor.tumblr.com.
They seem like benign entities now, or benevolent entities now, but we can't predict the future.
They always start off,
of course,
giving it away for
because
free.
Because I think they start off with great intentions, and then they have to make money,
and then
is always the problem, isn't it? So just that's my little bit of advice there. Own is, you know, keep a copy of everything you make. To the best of your ability, own a platform. Don't be afraid to use a Twitter or a Facebook. You know, let your own ethics be your guide in that regard. But don't let those places be the only repository of what you do. And to anyone, I encourage, have your own website at the very least. So at least there's like some little home on the internet that's yours.
These days, the other way is the newsletter.
Right.
The newsletter is really the direct connection to the audience.
Which means people should subscribe to the Radio Survivor newsletter, the Radio Survivor Bulletin. It's our free weekly newsletter, which we never mention on the podcast. So that's my fault.
You mentioned it. Yeah,
it's been a
couple weeks.
It's been a number of weeks.
But yes, the newsletter is a wonderful summation of the week's blogging.
Plus, a couple of extra stories, usually interesting things that we found. Say 2 weeks ago, there was a great story about our friend Sabrina Roach. That was in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. That was like Sabrina Roach has a cool job. And so we definitely wanted to include that in the newsletter. There's always an update about the podcast. And there's usually a personal note. Sometimes we have a little extra story or something there for people to read. And I'm quite certain it's because of the newsletter that Current, which is the Journal of Public Broadcasting, found out that we added Eric as a full partner to Radio Survivor. Congratulations, Eric, first of all.
It was...
And they reported on it.
Yeah, it warmed my heart to have my name and Current especially linked to something that I am happy about, like a positive development in my life.
But yeah, so congratulations. We should have made that announcement on here on the podcast. I take responsibility for that. and I'll just say that that's because, you know, we Radio Survivor, we're a tiny, tiny little company, but we are incorporated. And up to now, it's been Jennifer, Matthew, and myself are the three proprietors. And Eric, we've added on as our co-equal partner. So all 25% partners. Beginning like a week ago, we finally, the paperwork got finished and everything. And we did so because, Eric, because you've been doing this fantastic job. The podcast wouldn't exist if you weren't working on it with me. And the podcast is so much better because you are working on it with me. And it takes a lot of work. And we really appreciate your contributions have been fantastic. And we want people to know that this is how we're operating. We do not want to be a place that is stealing people's labor.
Right.
And so, you know, while we have some funding from listeners like you, and we really, really appreciate it, it's not nearly enough to pay Eric or myself anything close to a living wage for the work we're doing right now. And the other side of that then, well, at the very least, if you're doing that work, you should own it. And very explicitly, you are a part owner in this enterprise, in the podcast, and in RadioSurvivor.com. And that is the way we wish to lead. We wish to try and at least practice these things, which we think are the right way to do it.
Well, it's been a really wonderful 21 weeks, and I look forward to the next 21.
And people need to go RadioSurvivor.com/bulletin. That's where they subscribe to the bulletin.
Okay.
RadioSurvivor.com/bulletin.
That's your newsletter. That's your email newsletter.
Email newsletter. It's free, and we don't sell your name or anything like that.
And it's once a week. It's a very nutritious bite of real information.
We try to keep it that way.
Yeah.
And to support us, go to RadioSurvivor.com/support. We have a Patreon campaign. We can also take one-time or ongoing donations. Anything you can give is really appreciated and will help us only make this show better and to make Radio Survivor better. Well, I think it's time to catch up with College Radio.
College Radio Watch with Jennifer Waits.
So remember way back on podcast number 3, we talked about this new program that KEXP was working on. It's a syndicated show called Under the Needle, the KEXP Sessions.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So it's KEXP is a public radio station in Seattle, and they've got hundreds of bands who come to their station every year to record live performances. And so they have this massive stash of performances. So they decided to create a syndicated music series and offer it up mainly to college radio stations. So we got a preview of that before it actually launched, and now it has launched. And it's around 30 stations that have signed up to carry this series. So it's a weekly show of performances recorded at KEXP's studio. And as they had kind of predicted, the first episodes featured performances by Courtney Barnett, and then some other performers in the first episodes are Mac DeMarco and FKA Twigs. And so it's mostly college stations that have signed up to air the series, but there are also some community stations, and even there's even a foreign station. Now I'm forgetting where, but some of the college stations include WLUW at Loyola University in Chicago, WMSE at Milwaukee School of Engineering, KUSF.org in San Francisco, and Chaos, which we've also talked about recently, at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. And also some community radio stations have signed up to carry the series, including KWMR, which is in California.
Cool. And this is and the program is free to these stations. Is that correct?
Yes, it's free.
Sounds like a great new national and even international platform for independent music. And I look forward to hearing it.
Yeah, it's a cool thing.
And you have an interesting story about a community radio station which is turning to colleges for some help.
Yeah, KSVG Savage Radio. It's a community radio station in Bakersfield, California. And there's just an article that The Runner online wrote about the station, in which the station is specifically, you know, sending out the word to local college students that they'd like to have them come and DJ at this community radio station. So it's the case where there aren't college radio stations in the area. And so they're actively reaching out to students to say, hey, we want to be your college radio station, which I think is pretty cool.
That's lovely. It's like the reverse of these other college stations that you've been bringing up sometimes on the Radio Survivor podcast, that are college stations where only community members are the DJs and they don't invite the students in. So here we have a community station that's reaching out and trying to get more college DJs in their doors.
Yeah. And it sounds like they'd like to make it even more, official, like have some sort of official partnership with California State University in Bakersfield. So they're working pretty hard at that, and not just for DJs, but maybe journalists as well, which I think is smart, you know, to take advantage of the local college community.
Yeah, when I was in community radio at WEFT in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, that's the home of the University of Illinois, and I knew a lot of students who got involved at the station in a variety of different ways, and many of whom stayed on as volunteers because they also, you know, continued to live in town. They didn't leave after their education was over. But it was always nice to have that influx of sort of youthful energy and new ideas in community radio. And in Champaign-Urbana, there is a college station. It's a commercial college station, 107.1 WPGU. And so the DJs don't have the same kind of there's not the same breadth of shows. So if you wanted to do jazz, for instance, or some others, or deep electronic music or something, there really isn't the opportunity to do it on the college station. And so community radio often offers that opportunity, along with the opportunity to maybe learn journalism or do talk programming, of which is generally not heard so much on that other station. And it was, I thought it was always great. And I really enjoyed watching lots of college students at that time get their start in broadcasting and get really lit up by community radio and want to continue on in it in one way or another, and watched a number of them, number of students go on and have real careers in journalism, community radio, and in public radio.
Yeah, I think it's nice to provide that opportunity. And this station seems to have kind of a stereotypical college radio slant to it.
You know, it looks like it's focused on indie rock. And so they're probably playing pretty adventurous music. And so it just seems like a natural to be collaborating with the local colleges.
Yeah, that's great. And it also, I mean, I think another side benefit is that because students do cycle through, there's this constant sort of influx of fresh and new energy. Right. I think one problem sometimes with community radio is that shows go on much too long by the time, you know, where they finally get a little stale because it's difficult to shake up a schedule if a volunteer wants to continue doing a show. And because students graduate and move on, there's a natural turnover, which I think can be an actually healthy thing because then it creates space for new ideas and new DJs and new broadcasters to try out something different and to shake things up a little bit.
Oh yeah. I DJ at a college radio station, but it's sort of like a community radio station because it's at a community college. And we've had high school students too. And I just love that energy. You know, I think it's important to have a variety of ages at a station.
Well, that's great. I really hope KSVG and they're in Bakersfield, California, has luck with this outreach, and it might be something that other community radio stations can learn from their experience.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jennifer.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Jennifer. Up next, we're going to go straight to Matthew Lassar with his letter on radio.
Andrea Fraser of Performance Art fame has an interesting show scheduled for the Brava Theater in San Francisco. She's going to reenact the voices of four men talking about feminism on a discussion show at Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles in 1972. Here's an excerpt from the program in question provided by the Pacifica Radio Archives.
I felt for many years extremely pressured financially, for one example. I felt that I had to be the breadwinner. I had to bring home the money. I had to take care of the kids. I had to take care of the little wife sitting at home. And I find now a lot of that pressure is eased because I realize that it's in an equal relationship, the financial responsibility is equal. I no longer have to feel like everyone is dependent upon me. I can be human now.
That panel was moderated by KPFK's Everett Frost, Director of Theater and Literature. The men on the panel included Jeremy Shapiro, a professor of the California Institute for Arts and author of the essay Men's Liberation. I'm not entirely clear what Fraser is going to do with this audio. Here's an excerpt from one of her performance works titled May I Help You. She's performing this at an art museum.
It's a beautiful show, isn't it? You fall in love with a thing that pleases you and you can't resist it. Okay. Who are these people? Where did they get their money? What does all this have to do with life?
A clip from an Andrea Fraser performance piece. Given this presentation, will Fraser view the KPFK program ironically, supportively, postmodernistically? I don't know. But I like the idea of a performance artist reenacting an old community radio show. Check it out at the Brava Theater on October 30th in San Francisco. The event is a benefit for the Pacifica Foundation, Pacifica Radio Archives. This is Matthew Lassar for the Radio Survivor podcast with one more clip from that 1972 Men on Feminism program.
I got support through most of my married life from the people around me telling me I'm a good father, I'm a good husband. Now, why are you having trouble in your relationship with your wife, you know? And they tended to support it because they bought the whole male role and the whole female role. They weren't aware of what was real equality in a relationship and how a relationship could grow.
We get tracked to this from, you know, from the time of delivery.
I guess we're all in a way, you know, somewhat nervous about doing this. We'd confessed this before. We should confess it on the air as well.
True.
There are likely to be pauses.
Thanks for that, Matthew. It makes me smile because in 1972, that was a very courageous thing to do, I'm sure, to have three men, right, talk about feminism on the radio. But it in 2015, it is nothing but hilarious. It's like the panels of all men talking about women in tech, right? It's like, but and that's, one has to wonder if that's, if that will be mocked justifiably or not during the performance.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I think they were talking about their experience of feminism. But nevertheless,
it's still, we live in a moment now where
where mansplaining is a word, a very necessary word.
Where men need to listen,
like you and me. Sorry,
I can't. You know, we can't apologize more than twice an episode for being two white men on the radio.
Did we apologize already?
That I just twice an episode. All
right, well, feel free to cut this out. Well, I think that brings to a close this edition of Radio Survivor. Do subscribe to the show, which means in your favorite podcast listening app, whether it's something like Pocket Cast or Overcast, or you use the iOS Podcasts app, or you do it in iTunes on your computer, do subscribe so it's automatically downloaded. You know, there was a big glitch in iTunes this week. That many in podcasting have been fretting about, in that the new episodes were not being refreshed. In, if you were in the iTunes store and you went and looked, you did not see the newest episodes that were released this week, which included Radio Survivor, but also included far more popular and well-known podcasts. And iTunes on the download acknowledged that there was a glitch. And that was happening to many, 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 many shows. So if you're somebody who just goes and like goes to the store and listens, you wouldn't have found our newest show. But if you'd subscribed, because that means your app speaks directly to our website and knows when there's a new episode, you would have still gotten the episode. Of course, you'll also have gotten it if you went to radiosurvivor.com/podcast.
There's another cautionary tale about platforms.
About platforms is that please do subscribe. We really appreciate it, but it means you'll get the show automatically. You won't ever have to think about it. It'll be there for you. And you can find the RSS feed. The link is at radiosurvivor.com/podcast. If you're in your favorite app, you should be able to search for it as well. If you're using a Pocket Cast or Overcast, you should be able to search Radio Survivor and be able to subscribe right in your app. But please do so. We'd really appreciate it. If you have any comments, please do send them to us. podcast@radiosurvivor.com. Also tweet us, despite our words about platforms. We love Twitter. We use it all the time. We're at Radio Survivor, and give us a tweet, and you could hashtag it, I guess, podcast, if you want us to know specifically about it. But I think we can figure out from context, or maybe you can come up with a more clever hashtag than I can come up with here on the fly. And of course, all our show notes, links to things that we've talked about in the program, are at radiosurvivor.com/podcast. Thank you so much to Jennifer Waits for College Radio Watch. Thank you to Matthew Lassar for Lassar's Letter on Radio. This episode will be edited by Eric, whereas I will just talk into the microphone today. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Paul. Have a good week.